Level Up Life with Patrick Felicia, the podcast about learning, education, and change. Before we get into this episode, I'd like to invite you to join this community to hear more interviews that will help you to understand how games can be used for learning and change. All I want you to do is to click on the subscribe button. Thank you for your support, and thank you for subscribing. It means the world to me. Catherine Baker is an award-winning and internationally known expert in the design and analysis of serious games and in gamification in the classroom. She holds two computer science degrees and a PhD in educational technology. She is certified instructional designer with a graduate certificate in serious game design and research. She has over 35 years of teaching experience and has taught computer science, video game designs, and digital game-based learning and technical writing. Her teaching innovations have been internationally recognized and she is widely published. In this interview, Catherine will tell us a bit more about herself, her journey, and what emergent issues and challenges she thinks need to be tackled. So the format of this interview consists in 5 questions for which the answers should really help people to understand more about the field of games and learning. So let's dive in. Can you tell us about your journey, how you got started in your field, and what pivotal moments led you to where you are today?
I got my first 2 degrees in the 1980s, and for a long time at the beginning of games, I was actually anti-games, to the point where we wouldn't even allow our children to have game consoles in the house. As I began to watch my kids more, because they would still play games on rented machines and occasionally at other times, I began to realize that there was a lot more to it than I had thought. And so it started shifting my thinking on the value of games. About 20 years ago, when I began my PhD, I was actually looking at doing work with mental models, the kinds of mental models that people develop when they are first learning a discipline. And in this case, it was going to be computer science. And 2 of my students had a summer job working on a game-based learning project. And they would come and talk to me from time to time, and they would, complain about not having enough direction and having only the summer to finish the job. And then towards the end, like in August, the team got some instructional designers in who promptly started making all kinds of plans and drove my poor students just crazy because they had spent all summer developing software. And now all of a sudden the ID folks come in and say, no, you have to do it this way. So it occurred to me that instructional designers, at least at the time, which was in the beginning of the 2000s, had no clue about game design and the implications that that might have for trying to design an instructional game. And that's what shifted my PhD focus to instructional design of educational games, and everything kind of followed from there. So I did get my PhD in that, and I have been fascinated by the field ever since.
What are the core principles or philosophies that guide your work and your approach in your field?
Well, first I should maybe explain that my field has sort of broadened over the decades, from computer science through teaching and learning, through formal education, and art and games. So my ideas actually span all of those things, and my focus tends to be on the design of instruction that uses ideas from games as well as from other places. How I approach my work has changed a lot over the years. The things I'm doing right now, there's no way I could have done them 20 or 30 years ago. So my background is originally computer science and systems analysis by training. But now I've also got 40 plus years of experience in teaching, in computer science, in writing, in game design, in education, and in general science, with classes that I've taught that range in size from 6 to over 250 at all levels of higher ed from first year into graduate school. I've also done both online and face-to-face teaching, so that gives me a wide variety of experiences and ideas that I can apply to this. How I approach teaching and how I approach the design of teaching and learning has shifted more and more to my role as the teacher being one to curate the available information and connect the knots for the learners. When you're just starting to learn something, you really don't know what you don't know. And so it is should be the job of the educator, the teacher, the designer of the instruction to pull things together in a way and provide information both in amount and in timing in a way that helps people to learn the material that they want to learn. Along with that, they should also be providing work that helps the students master the material that they want to do. Over the years, I came to realize that really the only way for people to get familiar with and to really master material is to actually work with it, to do active things with it. And so that's where some of the successes of games and what we know about games comes into play, because we can use that to effect if we do it thoughtfully.
Can you share some insights into your current projects or areas of focus, and also tell us what's keeping you excited and motivated in your work right now?
Well, I'm at that point in my life where I'm closer to the end of my career than I was am to the beginning. And so I'm kind of taking stock and looking back, seeing what was good, what was bad, what worked, and what didn't. And I got to a point some years ago where I finally realized that it is really actually okay to question everything. Why do we do what we do? And why do we do it the way we do it? So even, for example, lectures, high-stakes exams, hard deadlines for things. What is the purpose of these? What does it gain? What do the students get out of this? And why, you know, do we really need to keep doing these things? What do we lose? What breaks if we don't? So that's where my focus comes in, and I keep taking ideas from successful games and games that work and games that people like to see what they do in those areas, in the way that they help people progress through to the end, in the way that they encourage people, giving feedback, allowing them to keep trying until they get it right or get it good enough, and giving them lots of choices. So that is sort of my version of, becomes my version of getting back to basics, what I think about, which is, what is it that we need our students, our learners to know? What do they need to be able to do? And what does mastery look like? How do we go about measuring it, right? What is good enough? And that doesn't always, turns out, it actually almost never looks like the way we have traditionally been doing formal education. Okay, so once you free yourself from the notion that things have to be done a certain way, a lot of possibilities open up. And if you think about what needs to be taught or what your students and learners need to look like when they're finished with this, you can approach it from a different perspective than you do if you come at it from, here's how it's supposed to look. And that's the sort of thing that keeps me excited, is this idea of novel approaches, or frequently used and not frequently used and sometimes even long forgotten ways to teach things that help students get where they need to, rather than loading them up with a whole bunch of content and then testing them with random questions drawn from a bank to see what stuck. What makes games so successful is that they tend to be fun. They're engaging, rewarding, interesting, motivating. They have all of the elements that make people want to stay and continue. And we need to think more about what we should be doing in order to make learning that, because at its very base, learning is a fundamental human activity, and it is fun. It should be fun, and we need to figure out how to get it back there.
What do you believe are the most pressing or intriguing challenges or trends in your field at the moment, and how are you addressing them?
Well, I'd say among the most pressing and intriguing challenges right now in formal education are one, doing more with less, two, figuring out how to work with AI, and three, giving agency back to our students. So the first one, doing more with less, I mean, we're continually being asked to do more with less. Budgets get cut, funding gets cut, help gets cut, and student classes grow, and their demands get bigger. So, I mean, it's all well and good to say that formal education is broken and needs to be fixed. But we've been saying that for ages, and nothing that is not happening, and it's not likely to happen anytime soon. So the solution here is to find small ways to make changes. And eventually, a bunch of small changes will add up and cause a big effect. So my approach has always been, what can we do that's small that can make a difference? So baby steps. The second one, working with AI, and I mean, it's been all over the news. It's here to stay. So denying it or making rules against it are going to be about as effective as, you know, the rules against using technology were. There are still people in universities and final exams that are saying you can't have any technology, you can't have to use your phone, you can't do this, you can't do that. And it just doesn't make any sense to me to put them in such a completely foreign and artificial situation and then judge their abilities based on that. So, you know, we need to work with the technology that's there. We need to work with AI. And in order to do that, you need to understand something about it. We need to help our students learn how to assess information. That's something that we really haven't been doing a very good job of for a good 20 years now. All the while, you know, things keep advancing. I used to teach my third year computer science students used to give a lecture on how to search with a search engine. And at the beginning of the lecture, they would all be rolling their eyes because everybody thinks they know how to do it. And towards the end, they're taking notes furiously because there are a whole bunch of things about this that simply aren't obvious. And so we need to share that with them. We need to share with them, how do you look at a piece of writing, at a document, at an image, at a film, and think about whether or not you think that this is real. What is it that makes you think it might not be? And does it matter? I mean, there might be some situations where it doesn't matter if it is, but there are others where it's going to matter a whole lot. And so having the skills in order to be able to assess evidence, to be able to look at the things you're seeing, the things you're reading, and decide whether or not this makes sense is the way we're going to have to go forward in incorporating AI into what we're doing. Then AI in and of itself becomes much less of a threat. The third part is in giving agency back to our students. We have for a long, long time, I mean, that began over 100 years ago with the march of industrial style education, that students are product, right? We need to teach them things and get them through the system and cookie cutter approaches that are going to fit everyone to get them out and into the workforce. And although we keep talking about the workforce like we did 100 years ago, the nature of the workforce has changed so dramatically that it's a completely different question now. And so what we need to do is we need to help students learn how to be effective, how to learn what they need to learn, because they're going to have to keep learning new stuff throughout their lives. So how to act for themselves, how to do the things that they need to do for their personal lives. And it's not just about being, you know, selfish and stroking their egos. It is about helping them learn to be their best selves. And that maybe sounds a little woo-woo, but the way we teach them and the ways in which we assess them all have a really big impact on that. And that's a big part of what I look at in the work that I do.
If you could give one piece of advice or share one key lesson that you have learned throughout your career, what would it be?
Well, I would say there isn't really one piece of advice or one key lesson, but it's a collection of them that I have learned over the years are really quite important. So I'll give you five. One, know your material. Two, don't be afraid to say, I don't know. Three, be willing to explain yourself. Four, set your bar high and trust them to reach it. And five, give them time to come to trust you. Right? The first one, you don't have to be an in and out, know everything kind of expert, but you need to be confident on what you know, and you need to be prepared to provide evidence for what you are telling them. Because with the way things are these days, there's all kinds of information around, and so be prepared to back up what you're saying. Two, don't be afraid to say you don't know. There are bound to be things that you come across that you really don't know. So say so. Don't make up something. Don't cover. Don't claim that something's uninteresting just because you don't know or they haven't figured that out yet, which is often code for, well, I haven't figured that out yet. Say you don't know. And if it's important to what you're doing, then make a point, make a note, go and find some answer that you can come and tell them the next time. They will appreciate this a lot more than if you try and cover for something that you didn't know. Three, explain yourself, right? There is nothing wrong with telling someone, here's what I want you to do, and here's why I want you to do it, and here's what I hope you're going to get out of it. I'm really not a fan of this whole stealth learning idea that, you know, we can make it so much fun so that they hardly even know they're learning. No, make it clear that they're learning. Learning is in and of itself a satisfying activity. And so get to it and you know, explain what you're trying to get out of this, what you want them to get out of it. That way, if they don't, you should also be inviting them to tell you what they missed so that you can traumat it again a different way. Don't be afraid to set your bar high. That's number four. You can do that, but you must also trust that they will be able to reach it given enough help, right? You don't have to do it for them. That's not the goal, but help them out with what they're doing so that they can actually reach the bar that you have set. If it turns out you've set it way too high, well, then you have to recalibrate. But don't lower your bar just to make sure everybody feels good and nobody complains. The last one, if you're going to approach something in a way that's different from what other people do, you have to give them time to come to trust you. They have been told a lot of things, especially once you get to higher ed. They've been told a lot of things by a lot of instructors, much of which was not actually quite true in terms of what they want and what the instructors will and won't do. So you have to give them a chance. You have to actually prove to them that you are worthy of their trust. And if you do it the other way around, if you trust them, they will often, almost always, rise to the occasion if you make it possible for them to do that.
Well, thank you for a great presentation. It was great. I think I have, and possibly all the listeners, learned a lot about your experience and about your skills and really your path and your journey. So again, thank you so much for your presentation and these insights.
You're most welcome, Patrick. I have thoroughly enjoyed it.
Thank you for this great interview. And if the listeners want to get in touch with you or discover more about your work, where should they go to? I mean, do you have any email or a site where they can learn more about you?
If you want to get hold of me, my email is becker@minkhollow.ca. And you can find my website at katrinebecker.ca. That's all one word, katrinebecker.ca. Thank you so much.
Thanks again for accepting this interview. And again, it was very, very interesting. And I hope and trust that our listeners will really enjoy that. That's it. Thanks very much. And I'll talk to you on the next interview. Bye-bye.